You're listening to the Trekmate Family Network.
The Battle Bridge is a proud member of the Tech Podcast Network. If it's tech, it's here. Please visit techpodcast.com.
Worf, Solus, Sue, report to the Battle Bridge. I'll join you in a moment.
Ensign, secure connector levels.
Aye, sir.
Crusher, Carteno, Gleason, report to the Battle Bridge.
Mr. Data, Mr. Worf, I have a special mission for you.
Note in ship's log that at this start time, I'm transferring command to the Battle Bridge.
How, Chris, how many kids do you have?
Five.
I thought so. I thought it was five, but before I said anything, I didn't want to watch it. Wouldn't want to get it wrong. Going for the sixth?
No, not anytime soon. No. Number five was a little bit of a surprise.
No or no time soon?
No time soon. We may at some point, but not anytime soon.
Excellent.
I think this is becoming a weekly tradition. As soon as I say go ahead and start the script, he goes into something else.
Just something to add to your coffers for potential funny stuff, maybe.
Oh, yeah. No, I keep this rolling. I keep it going. Yeah. This has been in the first part. The first one was, I speak Spanish. We don't know where it's from. And last week was, I don't know what it was about. Yeah, you asked Mark something, and now here we are. Do you have five kids? So this is fun.
Well, look, I was going to ask Chris who he thinks is going to win the Royal Rumble this weekend, but maybe that will just divert him too far.
Oh, man, we could get off on some stuff then. But I won't go into that.
Yeah,
that's not what we're here for.
I'll let you and Chris record that. You could use our bandwidth or whatever you want. I don't care. But okay, Chris, go ahead.
You're listening to The Battle Bridge, a TNG podcast where we discuss everything about Star Trek The Next Generation. Tonight's episode is The Host. I'm Chris from South Carolina.
And I'm James from London.
And I'm Lou from Nebraska. Chris from South Carolina. And I'm sorry, guys. Last show, we mentioned that we were going to have Mark on again. Mark is stuck at work. Apparently, he's been detained and arrested. We're not sure. Probably, you know, his lewd and lascivious acts that he does at work. And so he is not able to come on. But we were able to secure the teacher. Chris, how are you today?
I'm about to edumacate you.
Are you going to edumacate me?
Yeah. I'm great, man. It's a good day.
And you teach what grade level?
Fifth.
Oh, then it's way above me. I'm sorry. Yeah, you want to get down to...
Are you smarter than a fifth grader?
Oh, hell no.
Never. You might be a redneck if.
Yeah.
Sorry. Oh.
Although I do stand a chance on Jeopardy when the kids are on.
Nice.
Yes, yes, yes.
Because they lower the bar a little bit?
Way lower for me. Yes, it's called the Lou Scale. So, okay. Well, it's good to have you on. How is the upper pylon these days?
We're actually doing really good. We've had a great run of episodes. I feel like we're finally clicking a little bit harder, and things are going well. I've been having a lot of fun.
That's good. And I hate to admit this, but honestly, I'm in a job now where I can't listen to podcasts, and it takes me 5 minutes to get to work, so it's tough for me to listen to podcasts, but someday I will try and get back on the horse. So, hopefully. I don't know. As you could tell, guys, by the fact that this comes out every either 8 days, 14 days, 21 days, 7 days. It depends. So, all right.
I have to say, Lou, I expect the good people at Upper Pylon 2 will finish their series before we finish ours.
Well,
I think the current trajectory is that they're going to beat us.
I don't know. If we can, you know, knuckle down, maybe we might win. But you're right. They are catching up.
What season are y'all in? 4? This is 4, right?
Yep.
End of 4.
I just watched the episode and I don't have a clue what episode I'm in. Yeah, so we're in season four. We're in the middle. So y'all keep and we keep slowing up, like, and we'll catch you.
Yeah,
we only had like a 2-year head start, so I think it's a foregone conclusion.
I'll have a 2-year
start. I mean, Chris, I actually think there's more chance of In the Wilderness coming back and beating you than there is of us beating you. So we'll defer to you guys.
That's all right, because once our run is over, we're done. Y'all are going to the end of time, right?
We will.
Yeah. So.
Well, there's still Enterprise.
There's some word for longevity, right? And Voyager. And, are you going to skip Voyager?
And Lou, by the time we... actually, first of all, I have to apologize for my voice. I'm carrying a cold this week. The baby's had tonsillitis over the weekend, and things are always... everyone's always carrying something, right, when you've got a bunch of kids in the house. But Lou, by the time we finish Next Generation and then go on to Deep Space Nine, do Voyager, and then go back to the original series and then Enterprise, Discovery might have actually already been launched, so we can start that.
Yeah, well, isn't Discovery sometime soon?
The joke was they keep pushing it back in terms of the release date.
I was going to say it should have been soon, but I don't know. Okay. No, I would say, you know, that manned Mars mission might be, you know, going strong by the time we get done with this. We'll both be retired. Anyway. All right, Chris. Let's see. Press enter. And there you go.
So the synopsis for tonight's show is, a Trilla ambassador is on board to mediate a dispute and falls in love with Dr. Crusher. When the Trill host is killed, the symbiont has to be temporarily joined to Commander Riker to continue the negotiations and the affair.
At least until it hits a speed bump, or should I say two speed bumps. I'm sorry, I'll probably be interjecting with snark and cynicism. Go on.
This is officially the 23rd episode of Season 4 of Star Trek The Next Generation, and the original release date is May 13th, 1991, right around the time of WrestleMania. Written by Michael Horvat and directed by Marvin Rush, guest stars include Frank Luz as the original Odan, Barbara Tarbuck as Lekka Tryon, William Newman as Kaelin Tros, Patty Yasutake as Alyssa Ogawa, Nicole Orth Pallavicini. Wow, man, can they get some harder names for me, please? As Kareel Odan, and Majel Barrett as the voice of the computer. So, what do we think of this episode?
What about you, Chris? Why don't you start off?
Oh, man, I feel like this episode is slow. It does not move fast at all, and it doesn't care to. But I feel like there's some cool ideas, some nuggets of fun in here that are buried real deep under a lot of melodrama.
Okay, Doc.
Okay, I think that it's always said, right, that Deep Space Nine recovers the Ferengi, but it also recovers the Trill. Right. If this is where the Trill start, they certainly recover the Trill by the end of their run, or not even by the end, by the start of their run, they've got the Trill back in a good place. I don't really know where I fall on this episode. What I do know is that I don't think it's as bad as what Lou thinks it is, and I look forward to some debate, in particular towards the end of the episode. Because Lou, you can't just reduce the woman character to two speed bumps. I mean, I know it's the first episode filmed, or the first episode recorded under Trump's presidency, but you know, that's a little low.
Yeah, that's true. Well, yeah. Well, maybe they should have built the wall. Okay, so for me. This is a terrific episode. I absolutely have been in love with this since day one. I just wanted to play around with you. And now that Doc is saying, what was that? No, this is shit. This is shit.
It's not that bad.
It's just this. Okay. First of all, I could give a shit less about her love life. Every time I saw her kissing him, it just felt like, I don't know. It was bad. And then to have it changed over to Riker. First of all, that should never have happened. He's not a Trill. You can't just go shoving a Trill into a human body and it's going to take it. And
I'm just glad that she actually made an incision and not just shoved it in his general direction and hoped for the best.
Well, that's another problem. That thing was so big, when she got it in, I'm sure he wasn't able to use certain parts because, you know, they were blocked.
No, absolutely. I mean, the size of that thing was pretty much like the size of a newborn baby plus liquid you lose. So he should have been walking around as if he was pregnant. I mean, we can assume that the Trill have like an extra special hole, that there's a space where, you know, the non-joined Trill just have a very, relatively flabby part of their belly. But Riker, he should have been walking around 12 months pregnant with that thing sticking into him.
Oh, he, I disagree. Did. I think Riker probably has a nice beer gut that that they could just... We didn't see it, but they vacuumed out a little bit of the adipose and put this in this place with the stretchy skin, you know?
Ah, so you think before the operation was, before we insert the drills.
Yeah, we're going to...
We're going to keep you...
Laser away some of the fat, but keep the skin, you know, so that this thing fits.
Well, the trails are kangaroos. I mean,
but what does it fit into? That's my question.
For a human, nothing.
Yeah, that's...
That's why I say one. It can't happen. You can't just shove it. And then not only did it go in, it went on its own. So where are these things? Where's their feet? Or is it like a snake? It slithers in. But... It doesn't just go in and then all of a sudden Riker was gone. It was Odan speaking for Riker.
Well, yeah, and that's weird. And they changed that obviously later on in DS9, thankfully. But you got to give every episode its conceit, and this was kind of an early idea, and it's a cool idea. So that this thing goes into the body and makes it something else. I just think it's so cool. As an idea that I kind of forgive it for not being fully formed because they were still forming it. And then the guys who made DS9, they took this idea that they had seen and thought was cool. And then they formed it further and they made it into something that was more realistic and more appropriate and less shit, as Lou so eloquently put.
Mm-hmm. And I agree with that as well. I do like what they did to it. But it seemed like also that the romance was a little too quickly. It was, you know, Doctor's Log. I might as well get into the show here. Doctor's Log. I attempted to be a competent doctor, but failed miserably. Wesley is flaking in the academy, which, you know, makes me a shitty mother to begin with. And now, and guess what? I'm having constant sex with a stranger I just met yesterday. End log.
So it's really no hold bars this week, isn't it, Luke?
Grown women can have sex with whoever they want after however long they want. And I think that she's fine. She's good. And in fact, I have seen whirlwind romances like this in real life. And they usually end this way, in a flaming car crash of awfulness. But it was fine. I think it was fine for her to fall in love with him in a couple of weeks. Or at least fall in infatuation with him. And she deals with that. I mean, they deal with that in the writing. Maybe it's just the infatuation period, and then she kind of gives this look. And I think it's well acted by Beverly, by...
Gates.
Whatever. Gates, yeah. I think it's well acted by Gates in the beginning. There are some moments where I'm like, oh, God. But at the beginning, during the love phase, I could buy it. The one episode romances, you know, are usually tough, but this one is for a good reason, I feel like, at least.
Yeah, I mean, Picard does it as well with Vash.
And I love Vash. We all know my feelings on Vash.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, Lou, you didn't have a problem with Vash.
It's his sexism showing.
Yeah,
tuck that in, Lou.
It might be. I don't know. what if Wesley was still on the ship and Odan had to go into Wesley? What would she have done then?
That I think that actually may have made for an even more interesting episode. Can you imagine that conversation with him coming in and saying, "You better leave now if you don't want me to take you, because I'm just going to kill myself with her son."
Mama Beverly? Mama Dr. Beverly?
Oh, the Oedipus in this is just... Oh, yeah, Lou, that's a terrible idea. It's both a fantastic idea and a terrible idea, like, all wrapped up in one.
Or about Mr. Mott? I mean, let's talk... Oh, Data. Could it have... I mean, I think it could have gone in Data just as equally as easy as it went in Riker.
How's that even half true? I mean...
Well... What? It makes no sense either way.
No, it certainly doesn't make no sense. And, I mean, we glossed over the issue. I mean, we raised the issue of Riker. Well, what the hell does this thing do inside Riker? But also, if you think about it, you know, the Truels and the Symbionts are, you know, they are separate species. How the hell did they... How did you ever get to a state where there was the symbiotic relationship where this particular slug happened to fit into this particular set of humanoids? It, you know, I don't think they ever really dealt with that. And it does seem strange that it's kind of entirely possible, right? Just from a, you know, why would a species evolve that way?
Well, I mean, we think about evolution, right? And we think about parasites that we know now that live on or with other animals that they have to have kind of a symbiotic relationship like that. And I mean, there had to be some kind of path that they both took to get to that place. And that is an interesting thought. And I don't think we need to deal with it. We don't need all the science of it. But for your point, Lou, where you said that it would be equally as likely for Data to have it, Data doesn't have the things in him that allow for life in the way that Riker does, right? So both Riker and whatever Trill are organic life, whereas Data is not necessarily. And so I think that the nature of what the symbiont is, it requires probably organic life, would be my guess. And I think the episode kind of mentions that to some extent. We can't do Data because he's not organic, basically, is what they say.
Right.
So some jab at that.
I mean, it wouldn't be the first time, though, that Data had been taken over by some organic life.
Right.
I mean, despite everything. I find it strange. Do you think that the Trill, well, I mean, Odam, do you think he died merely because they weren't going to pay the actor like the full 5 days of shooting, and instead they needed it to go over to Riker, because they have this transition from Odam to Riker and then from Riker to someone else eventually. And you don't need, we need the intermediate Riker bit? Because I think that a lot of the criticism that Lou is going to have is about, you know, Beverly was happy to jump on board when Riker's in the middle. And
no,
why do we even need this Riker bit?
No, I'm not. Yeah. No, we do. We do need somebody. Riker was the one who volunteered. He was probably the best suited, most physically fit. Couldn't be Picard, but they needed O'Don, and somebody. They needed O'Don to continue these negotiations. So yes, it had to go into Riker, or else it could have sat in the stasis the entire time and waited for the next host. So,
but by the way, I get increasingly tired about this idea that they've done it many times before, that there is one dude that can broker peace and no one else can. Mm-hmm. And somehow, if you don't get this one dude, somehow, you know, these people will just, you know, whatever they're willing to put aside in order to make peace, whatever kind of, you know, social, political tensions there are, whatever's driving you in this direction, it comes down to a singularity where there's one dude 40,000 light years away that has to be involved. And if he's not involved,
which is never how it is in real life.
No, it isn't.
So it is a strange trope.
But the other thing, Doc, is that at the beginning of Riker O'Don, actually Beverly distanced herself. So she wasn't exactly, you know, full on board. He let her come back to him in her own time. It's at the end, and I don't want to jump, give it all away, but it's at the end that I felt that she was ready for the next host. She was at her desk with all smiles till the host walked in. And that's when went to hell.
No, but I think it's, well, went to hell from Beverly's expectations perspective, sure. But I actually think from a story perspective, I think it's very good what they did right at the end with the twister route, because you're right. you know, Beverly falls in love with the character and then he ends up dying. But in fact, it turns out that she wasn't in love with him physically. He was in love with, like, you know, the soul behind it. And you had this concept that the soul could be transferred to someone else. And I think you're trying to pose interesting questions about whether you're not, whether you're, like, you know, loving someone on a physical perspective or actually you're loving, you know, the person underneath that. And then you get the impression that Beverly has worked out that it's the person underneath that she's for, that she's fallen for, and she's well up for the you know, to capture the third iteration of her Dan at the end of this episode. But then she gets a, you know, fundamentally a slap in the face when she realizes that it's going to be a little bit more complicated than that unless she wants to get down to some girl on girl action. And I think that's a legitimate statement, right? That's what's wrong with that.
Okay, yeah, that makes sense. It does make sense, and I get it. But we need to talk about that down the road, because then there's a, if you've, I don't know if you guys have visited Memory Alpha lately, but obviously to get the synopsis, I have to go there every week. And I look at some of the continuity, the behind the scenes things. And there's a quote from Marvin Rush. Is that his name?
The director.
Yeah,
right?
The director. And it's an interesting quote here, and I'd like to discuss it a little bit later down the road when we get to that third host. Okay, so let's go on. So, go ahead.
Sorry, Lou, are you going to mention the planets, the two moons and that stuff? Is that on the schedule?
It wasn't at the Beta Moon and the Alpha Moon. Yeah, it's the people on the Alpha Moon have figured out a way to tap energy from the Pelear something planet, and the Beta Moon will someday suffer from it, and so they come as it comes between the Alpha Moon and the Beta Moon comes between the Alpha Moon and the planet. And so when the Beta Moon swings into the path of this, whatever they're doing, it's going to affect the Alpha Moon, right?
Yes, well, the Beta Moon.
Beta Moon.
I mean, I only have two issues with this.
Mm-hmm.
No, one, why would you call your two moons Alpha and Beta? That just seems to be asking for trouble, right? Mm. You know, call them something else. Don't call them, you know, A1 plus moon and, you know, Crapton. It's not a good, you know, not a good naming convention to go with. You're clearly setting favorites when you call them Alpha and Beta. And the other thing is that in this episode, they talk about the, you know, the dispute that's going on. And they talk about it in a way where you're almost expecting it to be a rational dispute where there's right and wrong on both sides. In this case, the Alpha guys, I would be happy to declare war on Alpha if I was Beta and to go after every single one of them. They're completely destroying their planet or their moon. And there's no debate here as who's in the wrong. So I have no idea about this. Or we should see both sides. You know, one's a mass murdering maniac and the other one doesn't like to be murdered. There's no reconciliation there. There's someone in the wrong. So I felt that this was a rather thin story to pin the episode on. But it doesn't matter, right?
Well,
right, it doesn't matter. It's not the big deal.
But they won't go to war. That's all that matters. Yeah, okay. So he needs to try and figure out, okay, so the point is Odan needs to get these people talking to each other. That's pretty much it, right? End of story.
Talking nicely with each other.
Yeah, yeah.
Kindly, but yeah.
That's pretty much the whole story right there. He's going to try and mediate these people. They're stubborn. One's killing the other, and they don't give a crap. And he's going to try and mediate between them. Who knows what he determined or what they did, because they never go into that. It's not about that. They just toss that in for a sprinkles of something. It's about Beverly. Okay. Anything else you want to discuss about the moons there, Doc?
No, not the moons. I'm already at the pedicure scene.
I love that scene.
Oh, yeah, that's when Deanna goes in for her next breast augmentation, right?
Oh, hang on. I'm going to go out on a limb and claim that Deanna's not had any breast augmentation.
None.
None. Of course not. But they come in and, you know, Beverly's... and she lets Beverly know that she's well aware of what's going on. You're in love. Ugh! I hate when you're so empathic. It's not empathic. It's pretty obvious, don't you think? And here's another thing. If we were women...
I certainly would.
Okay. So,
what's the question?
Okay, so it's... You're Jane, you're Chris with a K, and I'm Louise right now.
I'm Louise.
Which, by the way, we didn't have to change our names by much, did we? That was pretty...
pretty good, though.
Pretty remarkable.
Yes, it was.
And Chris with a K is actually Kieran, so...
It should be,
I don't know what you're saying about him.
Oh, wow. Sorry, Chris. How about K-R-I-S, not K-R-Y-S?
Fair. Okay.
How about Christine?
Y definitely makes you male.
Jane, Christine, and Louise. We're all three women now. Which one of us three would be attracted to Odin? Is he not the ugliest bastard that we've had on for a long time?
Oh, you're a damn lie. He's a good-looking man with nice flowing locks and a perfectly hairy chest. That's really strange when it has that composite makeup on it. That's all weird. Did anybody else notice the hair on the makeup job was really off in that first scene? It was strange. Yeah. And then the poking belly was weird. Just really awful, terrible effects.
Is it,
anyway, sorry.
Odin, is that something inside your... You know, is that a symbiont inside your belly, or are you just pleased to see me?
Nice.
I'm sure it was mentioned by... Beverly at one stage.
Odin, that's not supposed to get hard. You're getting it wrong. Anyway. I didn't think it was very... I don't know. Maybe. Okay, we're men again. So let's go back to the...
Actually, Lou, while we're on the subject of how ugly this sod looks,
sod.
The makeup... the makeup job for the trio in this episode is absolutely horrendous.
Oh, yeah.
And it's also well known, and I assume everyone that listens to this will know, that they actually tried that makeup on Terry Farrell as well when she started playing Gen Z, and there are various like shots of her out there. And imagine if that's what they had to put up with the seven seasons of DS9. It would be horrendous, right? And it's so much better that they went with the actual proper classic trio look rather than this monstrosity.
Mm. Yeah. And I do prefer the spots.
Everyone prefers the spots, Lou.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yes. Because then we would never know that they go all the way down.
Which is from a terrible episode.
Mm-hmm.
But... Whoa. Hang on. Mm-hmm. So let he with who is without sin, right?
No.
That's not that
the
one?
Episode. Mm-mm. No, the original episode that it was on was the one where Jadzia goes to the planet that's kind of out of time.
Oh, Meridian. And,
Yeah, Meridian. That's where that comes in, because he goes, hey, can I find out about those spots? And I think that it's mentioned first there and then brought back up maybe in the later episode.
Okay, Meridian pilot.
Meridian's terrible episode. Yeah.
It is?
I mean, possibly the worst episode of Star Trek ever.
It has strong contention. From another Deep Space Nine M episode, Melora.
That is terrible.
hang on. There's nothing wrong with Melora that can't be fixed by a bit of kind of season two-itis going on. It's fine within the context of season two. It's also they're trying to put a message across, right, about disability and stuff. And who's not in favor of someone attempting to put together a message about disability and falling on their face? Meridian, on the other hand, is just... It's soppy nonsense, as far as I can remember.
Laura.
It is soppy nonsense.
Hippocratic Oath, Doctor.
Hippocratic Oath is a good episode.
No, that's what I'm saying. Bashir needs to learn the Hippocratic Oath.
Okay. As probably does a...
There's a couple of those fallen for your patient things.
Don't sleep with your patients, Doc. Yes. Come on.
Yes, you could do better.
No, sure.
It may take longer, but you could do better.
And you know, Beverly, in this episode where she, you know, basically she's given the choice of, which male member of the crew would you like to place this, this symbiont into? Because chances are you might be able to sleep with them later on. It's not really a decision that the Doctor should be making.
Well, no, but she probably has always been wondering what Riker's been packing, and now she found out.
Oh, she God. Knows. She does the physicals.
Yeah, but
how many of these can loop back into one episode?
Oh, yeah. This I'm gonna have to keep this off of Tech Podcast this week, and I warned everyone last week that you're not gonna get it. You're gonna have to definitely get this from Truckmate. This ain't going on Tech Podcast. I don't even have the time to go through the whole show and edit all the bleep and everything.
And then, by the way, how quickly does Odan die? I mean,
pretty dang quick.
That's a pretty frail individual, right?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Well, you know, that had to hurt.
Meanwhile, Riker has not a scratch on him.
Of course not. He's Riker. Okay. So anyway. So Odan refuses to use a transporter because obviously it would hurt the symbiont. He just has a fragile symbiont. Because, you know, we all know better than that. But like you say, we're going to just ignore it and let DS9 fine-tune the Trill. But like, also, we discussed that it's time to visit the beauty salon. Why do you think they need a beauty salon in the 24th century?
Oh, man, you got to have a place to relax, Lou. I think it's fine. It's also a barbershop.
Yeah.
And we got a great Bolian shot in the background. I love how Bolians are just everywhere. They're just all over the place in the background. You don't really see many as first-rate characters. They're right up front in an episode. You never get one on the main bridge crew, you know, but they're always there. They're always in the background. They're always doing stuff, and it's great.
So you make it sound like they're slaves or something. They're always in the background doing the physical labor.
Wait a second. Wasn't there a Bolian on the bridge in the pilot for DS9?
Yeah.
No, wait. Yeah. No.
No, it's first officer, right?
Or, wait a minute, I might be thinking of the Jem'Hadar.
I really just mean senior crew, like your staff that go to the meetings. That's what I actually meant, not like bridge crew. I'm not saying they're slaves, but it's just interesting, you know, because they're a founding member of the Federation and they're always kind of around, but they're never a main focus, which is, I think, pretty funny.
That's true, yeah, but they weren't a founding member of the Federation until much, much later.
I mean, I thought they were a founding member, right?
Well,
they weren't one of the original.
Yeah, in Enterprise, but
okay.
I mean,
well, yeah.
No. Lou, you've got your Bolians and your Andorians mixed up.
Oh, geez, that's right. See, that was racist, wasn't it? I mean, they all look alike.
Blue skin.
God, who knew? Yeah, I think you're right. You're right. Okay, sorry. Now, here's one thing I do really like about this episode. I love it when they put Picard, they have him so out of place. He's just so uncomfortable. And what I'm talking about was he and Odan were discussing Beverly and how she's an extraordinary woman. Wouldn't you say? Oh, yeah. Yeah, I guess she is. Yeah. I mean, he was just simply out of place. And then Odan starts asking how committed she is to remaining in Starfleet, as opposed to maybe, you know, going home with him and having little symbiont babies. But I started to see a little hint of jealousy maybe in Picard, too. You know? I wouldn't presume to speak for her.
Lou, you actually make a good point. How do symbionts reproduce? You know, when Trills do this thing, you get Trills, you get the hosts, right? You don't get symbionts.
Symbionts don't, but how are they made?
Well, is there like a limited availability on them? Is it like we've got 15,000 and then no more?
Well,
that doesn't make sense.
No, that wouldn't make any sense at all, because then the Trill would be done. They have to have a way to make new Trill. Maybe it's in the pool there.
Okay.
What you do is you get one symbiont on the table. The other one, I don't know how it would work. Maybe the end of their tail meet up with each other and it just happens. Electrochemical?
Yeah, we have sound effects on the podcast now.
Uh-huh. I don't know. I don't have a clue. I would, you know, maybe next time in Las Vegas, who was the designer of the trill for DS9? I mean, who would be that person that's going to be up on stage that we can walk up and say, hi, my question is for, how does the trill...
Michael Westmore, right?
Michael Westmore.
Yeah, the makeup designer.
Yes.
Or makeup artist.
Yes. You are going to walk up there and ask that question. How would the trill reproduce? How do the trill symbionts reproduce? We know how the hosts reproduce, don't we, guys? And let everybody laugh, and then you say, but how would the symbionts reproduce?
To be honest with you, I wouldn't be surprised if this has already been covered in the books.
Hmm. Okay. Well, you have to find it then.
Data Logan, help us out.
Yeah, really, Data. Yeah, that's true. Brian Baker would have known, I guess. I don't know. Okay, so. Now.
Also, I have to add this in here. I went and checked your favorite, Memory Alpha. Bolians were not founding members of the Federation. I was wrong. They just joined the Federation. But they are everywhere. They're all over the background from TNG forward. And anyway, So proceed forward. I just wanted to fix my mistake before we got tweeted and messaged.
But are all Bolians arrogant?
I don't know. Are they?
Mr. Mott's always got a few things to say. There's that Bolian ambassador that Bashir gets to handle. Okay.
I mean, I guess they're outspoken. I don't know that they're...
Okay.
Haughty.
Arrogant.
I don't think... Okay. They're not even all blue, right? Isn't there a...
Oh, no.
I mean, the very first one looked like almost like off-white. And wasn't it like a greenish one in the... In the episode with the fake Norsican, or the Norsican knockoff.
I don't know, man. All the Bolians I remember are blue-ish.
Ish. That's it. Ish. Okay, so it's in sickbay that we discover that the Trill are a joined species, and the symbiont is the only thing that matters. It must survive. So it must be put in another host. And the solution was... Any takers? Why do you think you guys are doing DS9? So, why do you think it's the symbiont that matters so much? Is it the fact that they're rare? They're hard to come by? I mean, hosts are willing to die for the symbiont?
We've had a few conversations about this, actually. I feel like it's almost religious. Like, it's almost a religious... It's such a... small club of people that it becomes prestigious to have one. And it's what allows your legacy to carry forward. So, you know how Shakespeare wrote that this poem, you know, will keep you alive forever, essentially, in one of his sonnets. I feel like this is a living version of that, a living version of your legacy moving forward, that you will be remembered. It's like when Sisko says, "How you doing, old man?" Even though he's talking to Jadzia, like, he still remembers his friend. The legacy of his friend still lives physically in the universe and can go on and become friends with Sisko's son or Sisko's son's son, you know, and there can be this familial relationship that carries forward in such a way that that you start to almost worship it, almost revere it in a way. So I think it's important because of that.
I mean, I kind of agree. I mean, I wouldn't necessarily say it's on the religious side, but I think on the legacy side, I think it's certainly very important. But if you, you know, move into like the real world, people would treat the same, they'll treat it exactly the same way their children, right? You know, the children would be considered the legacy of the family, and you can like pass things down, and that's kind of like the natural order. And in a certain way, you know, given that the symbionts are going to live much, much longer, live like 10, 15 lifetimes or whatever it is, It is a way of ensuring, you know, what you have done carries on and what you have done matters, and that you, you know, you keep it all going. And I do see it in I do see it very similar in a way to, you know, having children and having the next generation, the next host come through.
And that's funny too, because you know, I look at my dad and I see the way that he walks and the way that he talks and the way that he laughs, you know, these little small things that are just genetic that he, you know, he has no control over. And I recognize some of the same things in myself and now in my children, where I'm like, how did you learn to sit that way? And they just do it naturally. Or how did you, where did you pick up that little thing, that little nuance of thing that you do? Mm-hmm. And so you're also carrying on like physical attributes and even movements and tics. So it's really interesting to think about that piece too. But yeah, definitely with the legacy of children and ancestry.
Good point. Okay. So we already discussed how a human host can carry Odan since he dies. And, you want to talk about what happened to Odan? So Riker and Odan go to mediate peace with the Alpha Moon and the Beta Moon. And, of course, as any shuttle mission will go, it'd never be a good thing. And they come under attack. And Odan is hurt. But he still can't transport.
I really like the ship that they used here. It almost looked like a little garbage scow or something, like it was just thrown together. It had a real Star Wars feel to it. Mm-hmm. I thought it was pretty neat. But otherwise, this is just a scene to... It was actually the most action-packed scene in the entire episode. So I guess there's that. It was not slow, like the rest of the episode.
That is true. But you got to figure that... That little shuttle had some balls because, you know, the Enterprise is right next door and could have obliterated it in 2 seconds, but didn't, of course. But still, Odan is hurt. The symbiote has to come out, and we need to find somebody. Any takers? Yes, Riker. And even though Dr. Crusher, she's still showing her bad doctor skills, she cuts Will vertically instead of horizontally. Horizontally, or I guess you could say. But that's okay. It's all right. The slug just kind of like falls right in and becomes one with Riker. And the surgery was a success. So now Beverly is free to carry on her love for Odan. Well, sort of. This part of the episode I did kind of like. Because of the fact that, just like she says, I don't know who you are. So she's setting up sort of for the end of the episode by being completely confused as to what she should do, what's the right thing to do.
Well, it's got to be strange, you know. She fell in, like, for humans and for us, you know, part of a large part of the person that we fall in love with is a very physical kind of thing. And so, you know, if that suddenly changes as quickly as it does in this episode in mere days and then weeks, she had been with this guy for 2 weeks, then he becomes Riker for a few days, then it becomes this other person. You can see how, if your mindset is not used to that idea, that would be kind of jarring. But then, of course, they do away with all of this with that one episode in DS9 where, you know, Trill can't date the same people or whatever stupid thing there is. So well, this episode gets completely shifted to the background at some point.
Well, that's the thing, Chris. You, like you said, and that's also in Rejoined. It's the same thing, isn't it?
Yeah, it is. It's exactly what Rejoined is.
And this is the one that you guys lost. So this is one that I wish you guys could redo, but we will do it for you in the future. The point is that's why I said Star Trek kind of redeems themselves because of this whole stupid idea that Trill can't, you know, be with each, they can't carry on the relationship with the, from host to host. They're not even allowed to acknowledge or be around the person. So Ezra should be scorned forever. And I think that's the reason why they do that is so that the girl on girl kiss that happens in DS9 doesn't go too far or else happened too quickly. They needed that for almost the end.
Well, they wanted that to be kind of a taboo so that they were kind of overcoming a taboo. And then I think that it was to mirror society, you know, that homosexuality was a taboo in American society at the time. And so like we all thought that was what they were speaking to. And so that's kind of what that episode ended up being. And then now it's lost to the ether forever. But But with that said, I think that that particular episode does kind of mess things up by doing that and making it a taboo. And I think you still could have made just as strong a point just having it happen and then fall back in love and then realize that it wasn't going to work out for other reasons. Because you knew they weren't going to bring on that person to be in love with Jadzia forever. Mm. But here in this episode, I don't think there's as much of that kind of tension as there is in that. And I don't think that's the point they're trying to make in this episode. I think in this episode, they're just trying to ask, what is love? And if your lover was just on the inside, could you deal with like the changes to the outside physical appearance, which is a really cool idea and a neat idea. What is it that draws you to a person? What is it that you fall in love with in a person? Is it them, their mind, their soul, or is it some outward thing? Mm-hmm. And that's why this Trill idea wasn't fully fleshed out, I think, but I still think it's neat. Nietzsche.
Nietzsche, huh? Okay. It's a new word. I haven't heard that.
It's a meme. Nietzsche walk is never mind. Just keep going.
All right. Doc, we haven't heard you for a while. Doc fell out. Dr. James Roberts, please come in. Please report to surgery. Oh. See if that helps. He is like Gonski. Yeah, you can hear us, but we can't hear you.
Yeah.
Carry on. No way. Well, I mean,
there are a few more things that I can say about this if I want to delve into those. I was going to give Doc a chance to speak because I noticed he hadn't spoken in a while either. But
I just thought
until he gets his issues fixed. Lou, one of the things that I that intrigues me the most about the Trill that wouldn't even have been on the radar in 91 and definitely not on the radar still in 94 was today we have this idea of like everybody's pushing these transgender rights and all of these things. And there's this strange divide in American culture in that some people see this as, you know, you're born with what you got and you are this thing. And some people say, well, you're born with what you got, but maybe, you know, your chemistry is different and you feel more like this or you feel more like this. So there's like all this stuff with feelings and science and it's all mingled together and people get real upset about it. But I feel like Star Trek found a way with the Trill to kind of discuss this idea having that veneer of things. Because think about this, the Trill carry with them in their brains the feminine aspect and the masculine aspect at all times, if they've ever been feminine or masculine, right? Of Trill society. And it could be different than human society, right? Mm. So I feel like it's such an intriguing concept to just be able to explore that idea without the trappings and the kind of vitriol that surrounds what we are dealing with here in America today. I think that's a really interesting piece of of the Trill idea too that could be explored in a current kind of Trill idea.
And that is interesting because in 1991 I don't recall such a thing. I don't remember all that happening, and it's all so recent within the last 5 years or so.
You would have had like drag queens and things in the 80s and the 90s, right? Well, like that was still a thing at the time. RuPaul existed in the 90s. It certainly wasn't the hot and button topic that it is today.
Oh, hell no. I remember in WKRP in Cincinnati, there was a episode where Herb Tarlick's college buddy, you know, had a sex change operation. So, I mean, it's nothing new.
Right.
You know, that's what they called it at the time. But yeah, you're right. Imagine if what would the trail be like in today if it was today's society? I don't know. That's a very good point.
How would they write it?
How would they write it? You know, they never had a character who was confused, or I guess you could say, as to who they thought they were or what they thought they were, male or female. I mean,
I was going to say, wasn't Harry Kim confused?
Harry Kim. I always thought, I don't know. I always wondered somewhat if Harry might be gay, but it, you know, I don't know, for some reason.
I kind of wish they would have went down that road in the 90s instead of now, you know? Like, I know they're going to have, like, representation still matters today. But but I think that it would have been more Star Trek-y if they had kind of dealt with, you know, homosexuality way back then. And honestly, you know, we talked about this just now, Lou, and to TNG's credit, they did something like that, right? With Riker and that species that's coming up in the future here, I think. Oh. Or you might have already covered it.
No.
No, it's coming up next season.
It's coming up next season. Good. Season 5. So it's an intriguing concept that was apparently even in people's minds way back then. I just think that the trail would be a fantastic conduit to discuss it and kind of deal with it and see what people think.
Yeah, that is an interesting. You're right there. Wait till we get to that one. No gender. A species with no gender. Conceived in husks or something. If I remember. So anyway, James, you've heard us, but you weren't able to talk. What were your thoughts?
I was kind of really agreeing with Chris throughout, to be honest with you. So I don't really have a huge amount to add.
Okay.
I have to say, though, that, you know, even away from, I think that the drills, though, they happen to be a good launching off vessel for a lot of this kind of like gender and mixing, just because they carry with them, well, first of all, they're a mix of two things, right? Two beings. And then they also carry history with them as well. But I also think that, you know, from a sci-fi perspective, I think the idea of having, you know, two things working as one is also kind of like it's a relatively good storytelling device. And even if we don't have this concept of, you know, inheriting stuff from previous hosts, you still have this concept of this being that has managed to become, you know, symbiotically attached. And in this episode, it sounds a bit too much like the symbiont is in charge, whereas later on it's more of a blend between the two. And I think it's a lot more interesting to understand it as a blend between the two, because then they can start using it as a way to express issues such as, you know, to what extent are you motivated rationally versus emotionally? And I think sometimes people feel like they don't have as much control over their emotions. And you can very easily see that being put down to, like, you know, the trill, the symbiont part of you, and the host is not quite in control of everything. So I think, you know, I get it in terms of the gender and the sexuality side, but also just in terms of two beings being in control of a single body makes a lot of cool sci-fi concepts possible.
Okay, so O'Donnell's now in Riker, and, you know, Beverly's really confused as to what she should do.
Okay, if we're going to get there, let me just say I thought that she was negligent in the way that she basically took this big thing out, cut Riker, put it nearby to watch it kind of crawl and go in and devour him. He sits there, he almost dies or so, and she's just sitting there going, well, let's see what happens. And then it's only like at the end, it's like, oh, okay, well, I guess he survived then. Great, let's keep going. She didn't really seem to give much medical attention.
No, because she really didn't know much about it.
Which is why she never should have undertaken this in the first place. But we have to give that conceit to the episode, because trills are new and they have to do something with them, right?
Well, she Googled how to do that.
Beverly Crusher's Google Foo is the best. Oh, yeah. She is a second-rate black belt of Google Foo.
Mm-hmm.
And also, aren't we still in another one of these situations where could you not just warp to the ship that had the trill instead of waiting an extra day or so? I mean, it's only in Riker for a day, as far as I remember.
but it so felt like a week.
But you got a, yeah, you got enough action for a week. You got enough action out of Riker for a whole weekend. Why didn't they just head off in the direction of the drill ship? It, you know, there was the bit where in the end they had to take it out of Riker and it was still X amount of hours away and they're still not moving.
Mm-hmm.
Why?
Torment Beverly, I guess. I don't know. Oh, okay, but as I was saying, Riker, you know, being suave and deboner, he's able to continue on the relationship with Beverly, and next thing you know, now they are, like, massive hooked up.
Yeah, and by the way, he starts hating on her whilst still in the surgery bed.
Oh, yeah, that's right.
Straight away.
Straight away. What do you think? I mean, was Riker, like, just completely put on hold? I mean, was he like a second call that was just put on hold and, you know, O'Don took over everything?
It does seem that way in this episode, yeah. Even when Picard talks to him, especially when Picard talks to him in the room there where he's, like, sitting there and he's talking to him, he talks about Riker to O'Don, and O'Don is like, yes, blah, 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 this about Riker. So it just seems like it's fully O'Don in this episode from the way it's written.
Okay. But anyway, so then we get this scene in 10-4, which, you know, the music in the background kind of made it a little sweet. You know, when Deanna was talking to her about, you know, what do you do? Well, you know, you remember the love that you had, and if you could find that love in Will Riker, go ahead and go have sex with him.
Maybe it was the baggage that I carry with me of my just absolute fanboy shipperness with Troy and Riker. But I found this scene really, really powerful.
Yeah.
And kind of adult on Troy's side, because Troy is obviously, as we know at this point, in love with Riker, but she's still like, hey, if you two are in love with one another, you know, and this O'Don is in Riker's body, what changes about what you were in love with? You know, I love the conversation. I love the kind of the just who it comes from and how it happens. Now, I understand that it's only because there are only two females on the ship or whatever, but I just thought it was pretty cool that it came from Troy here.
By the way, I've said it before and I'll say it again. Troy is too good for Riker.
Amen. And
this episode proves it once again.
But my wife is way too good for me, and thank God that women...
Most wives are. Don't worry.
Thank God that women go for men that are not as good as they are.
I don't know how it works out, but yeah, predominantly it seems to be the case.
Mm. Okay. But yeah, you're right. It was a pretty good scene with Deanna and Beverly, and then after a lot of soul searching and she has a glance at a single rose, she decides, you know, you're right. I'm going to go to that
man. Not just any single rose. It's not just any single rose. Come on, it's Chekhov's gun. It was introduced by him, O'Don, the original O'Don, the ugly ogre, as you say he was, handing it to her as he got on the ship. So there's some connection there, man. Come on, don't sell it short.
Yeah, that's true. But still, she decides that maybe it wouldn't be such a bad thing. And besides, Riker's a hottie anyway, so... She'll go ahead and continue on. And besides, even after this is over, this is something that her and Riker will remember for a long never talk about again, ever.
Well, they talk about it. They just only talk about it over poker as she gives him a hard time. Like, let's hope this hand lasts longer than you did. You know, that kind of stuff.
Yeah, right. Every woman from then on will never be the same as Dr. Beverly.
I can imagine that she is pretty great. I love Beverly. I just realized that came out much different than I meant it to sound. I just mean like a pretty great person to be in a relationship with, not anything lascivious. I really love Beverly Crusher. I think that she's a beautiful, wonderful woman in the series, and I wish that she got more screen time without candles. Even though I love Sub Rosa.
Sub Rosa. Okay, so anyway. they carry on, and now it's time to mediate this dispute that we have, and either they're going to go to war or they're going to solve this one and give it one more shot. And I wish we could have seen some of the mediation. I would have liked to have seen what their thoughts were as to, you know, why are you killing us? Well, because we think we can. It's better for us if you're... It doesn't matter what happens to you. It's just better for us. I would like to have seen that position. Okay.
Yeah, I'm not invested in the storyline about these people at all at this point.
Right.
Which is probably a failing of this episode in the writing, but nobody claimed it was a well-written episode.
All right. Okay, so Picard is trying to contain himself because obviously he's still crazy about Beverly, but she's with Riker. It's so weird. It's just so weird for me to wrap my brain around she's with Riker. But he does pretty good in this. He keeps his emotions in check. And in the end, they will not go to war. O'Don has done it. You know, the behind closed doors meeting, cameras turned off, or maybe they just lost the film. Who knows? But we don't get to see it. And now it's time to get the symbiont out of Riker because he promised. And it's sitting in a glass jar and was moving. Did you notice a symbiont moving? And another weird thing, it was breathing.
Yeah, I will say this. The symbiont in this episode, I think, looks way cooler than the symbiont in DS9. I like the colors. I like the... I think that the size of it is pretty awesome. And they carry over some of those things, but it looks more like an organ in DS9 and less like a funky psychedelic organism like it did in this episode. I thought it was pretty cool looking.
Just here. Too big. It's just too big. Doc, did we lose you again?
No, I'm still here. And I agree with the... I do think it looks very psychedelic.
Mm-hmm. It's just too big. I can't imagine that fitting anywhere in any humanoid.
Well, I mean, I mentioned it. I don't know why, you know, Riker doesn't look pregnant in this episode, but, you know, it's a minor nitpick.
He was wearing his maternity shirt.
Mm-hmm.
Well, actually, isn't Gates pregnant in this episode?
Yes,
I think she's hiding a bump, at least equivalent to Riker's bump, so to speak,
or maybe a little bigger. Yeah,
well, I know Riker's bump will be pretty pronounced.
Okay, so here we go. And this episode is pretty much over. The only thing we have to get to is the new host. And like I said, what bothers me is the fact that she was put off by the host going to the symbiont going to Riker. How am I supposed to carry on this relationship with Will Riker? It makes no sense. But then the next time it gets a new host, she was way ready for it. It's almost like she set herself up for failure or for disappointment. She was waiting. She had that big grin. You know, Worf walks in. Go ahead.
But this is the entire point of the episode, right? This is, you know, this is by construction. This is what they're doing. They're showing you that. You're seeing that Beverly has gone from someone that has to learn about this transitional nature towards someone that is now, like, you know, expecting and excited about carrying it on.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Well, yeah. And one thing, Chris, I think you had mentioned that even after O'Don dies, they don't go anywhere to meet. Actually, I think they do. I think they warp to meet the Trill host at warp 9.25277647. And I think they do warp to meet up with the host to try and get a
finally in the end. Yeah.
And so basically, you know, Worf comes in, says, new host is here. And she has to be thinking, oh my goodness, this is great. I hope he's at least half as good looking as, oh shit. As she sees this woman come walk in. Okay. This surgery is a success. She transfers a slug into the new host. And she's talking about the log. As this woman walks in, it says, "Oh, Dr. Beverly, you look so distraught. What's wrong?" Okay. I'm going to summarize my problem here this way. Had she says, "We're not used to these kind of changes." Had she instead said, "Look, I'm just not into women. We can't do this because I'm not into women. I'm sorry." And then she could have said, "Perhaps it's a human failing," because it would have been real. But this, we're not used to these kind of changes.
So the Southern kind of gentility of laying this, the blame of this on just changes instead of today you're a woman, tomorrow you could be a man. I just can't keep switching back and forth kind of thing. That's the problem.
I see both ways. You're right.
Yeah.
If it had gone into Picard, she would have been okay. If it had gone into Ensign Joey down on Deck 22, who knows? Maybe she would have been fine. That's what I would have liked to have seen if we bounced from host to host to host, because it can only be in Wrecker for, say, an hour, 5 hours. And then, but it has to be in a host, because I got that from DS9. It has to be in a host, or it will die. But in here, she puts it into stasis. So it could have went into stasis, but they needed that host to continue those negotiations. But had it been, it must be in a humanoid body to survive, but can only be in a non-trill body for 10 hours at a time. Had they gone from host to host, at least maybe two or three hosts, then it would have been interesting for her to say, "This is too many changes." But it was only two changes, and one she went for completely, and she was looking forward to the second change. And it turned out to be a woman. Had she said, "I'm sorry, it's a human failing. I understand that some people are okay with this. Some people can continue this relationship. I know many women who are with other women, but I'm just not one of them. I can't be that person." That would have been honest, but this seemed like a cop-out.
I think that's a fair point.
It just bothered me. In our 1991, homosexuality was becoming more and more accepted. I mean, look at it today.
But do you think it's a judgment on homosexuality?
Yes.
So I always took it as a judgment on, well, I always took it as being true to Beverly's character rather than a judgment on homosexuality. I mean, you know, had she turned around and said, "Look, you have some funny ideas about what humans are going to be getting up to. And if you think you can pull this kind of stuff, you better get, you know, you should sling your hook." I didn't interpret it in that way. I really did just interpret it very much as it's something that this particular character, you know, the Dr. Crusher, was not able to deal with.
Right. But why?
Yeah. Well, because the way the scene is written, I got the sense that she was like, "Hey, you know, societally, one day maybe our whole society will be more okay with transitioning love this often." So I don't know that I agree with you, Doc. Like, I think that Lou might have a fair point here in that it's just kind of a strange 1991 capsule of something weird. That's they're not out there with it because they're still free think. I feel like the people who write this type of show are a little more free thinking and open to those ideas, but it's not closed or in any way like ooh shameful, but it's definitely not as open as it could be.
No,
well, the thing is, I mean, I think that you could have ended this episode a number of ways, and you could have just ended the episode with the person coming in here being twice, you know, Dr. Crusher's age and clearly not being appropriate, or, you know, maybe a third of Dr. Crusher's age and clearly not being appropriate.
Man, we made a great goof of that on our show right there. The old man, the old ugly, you know, gross man, Abe Bagoda. You'll hear him never, but that's okay.
But instead, they do bring up the possibility of it being a woman, and at least there is a possibility that dangles there about the possibility of the relationship or you know, at least the love being able to carry on. You know, they make it very explicit that there is still love between them, and it goes beyond the physical. And, you know, I'm not necessarily probably best placed in society and at the time to judge whether or not they were being, you know, kind of hyper-aggressively liberal in their attitude that they were putting out there, or extremely kind of reactionary in how they presented this particular story. But I didn't, it didn't jar with me. And I don't know whether it's...
Yeah, I don't think it was jarring. I think that's the problem, though. It wasn't jarring. It was just, like, subtly a part of its time. Does that make sense? Like, that's kind of my point, is that it wasn't this jarring, like, anti-homosexual message. I don't think it was. But I think that there was this, like, we don't want to cross the line too far.
No.
Does that make sense?
Oh, absolutely, because that's another thing I read in Memory Alpha, is that they even got letters about it, about even... breach or talking, getting near the subject.
And hang on a second. Isn't getting letters about it in the 90s the equivalent of saying that someone was angry on Twitter?
Yeah.
Right.
You know, realistically, why should you even listen to them?
Yeah.
Right. And that's true. But like you say, though, they weren't going to even touch that subject because obviously it would have set off a lot of problems. But in 1991, who here would have thought there'd be a successful television series called Modern Family? I mean
even before that, Queer Eye for the Straight Guy. Yeah. What was the original one that I can't even remember from the 90s, the actual sitcom from the mid 90s that was that had a homosexual main character. So I mean, yeah, we were in the throes of that. No, Ellen did not have a homosexual main character. Ellen came out of the closet in the 90s.
Indeed.
But there was a show, and I can't on it. Matt would kill me. Will and Grace, maybe.
Yes, they did.
Yeah. So, I mean, this was we were on the precipice of that change, but it's still 1991. You know, there's still that little bit of weirdness about it, and so we're gonna broach the subject, but we're not gonna cross the line.
Okay.
And that's I think that's a fair criticism of the episode. You should have broached the line. You should have just had her, you know, say what Lou said she should say, or like, you know, Dr. James, it could have ended any number of ways, and actually dealt with some issue instead of kind of going halfway, because half measures don't make for great episodes.
Mm-mm.
And this does not become a great episode because it is kind of a half measure. Now, I agree with James that it is not an awful episode, that it still delves into some cool stuff. I'm not like Lou where that ruins my whole mindset on it, but it's definitely a half measure, and it doesn't go nearly far enough to make any impact.
But see, that's another thing, though. You know, I figure when it comes to the subject, my grandparents never would have conceived the idea. My parents, totally against it. They couldn't stand something like that. My generation, our generation, we're okay with it. My daughter, she doesn't get the big deal. She knows gay friends. She knows people who are just, they are. Her kids, and it's going to get, I feel, better over time. I think our Supreme Court made the right decision. Whether anyone agrees with that or not, I don't care. People should choose to who they want to be with. Absolutely. In the 24th century, however, I don't even think it should even be an issue. There's no way humans... There's no way it would have been true in the 24th century that it's a failing in humans, and that we're just not used to these kind of changes.
I think that's a fair point, and she should have been open and honest. And, and looking at it from this perspective today, I think that's how it would be written today, is, hey, look, this is just not what I'm into. There are many Earth people who are into this type of thing. It's just not what I'm into. And so, you know, sorry, I can't follow you down this path with this particular housing of yourself, which then gets into something that the episode could have dealt with even further. Is it the inside essence or is it the outside shell? Which I think is, it kind of toys with as well, but doesn't fully commit to. So this is kind of a strange episode with cool ideas, yes, but poor execution.
Here's that quote from Marvin Rush. I don't know if you guys have found it yet, but he said, "I felt that it was more about the nature of love, why we love and what prevents us from loving. To me, the best analogy is if your beloved turns into a cockroach, could you love a cockroach? It's the same person. If the person is the personality and core within, but can you get past the outside? And I think Marvin's completely off point here by pulling up a cockroach. It wasn't a cockroach. It was a living, breathing humanoid, a person. If it was a cockroach, I don't know. I mean, what if O'Don had to go into a dog temporarily?
let's not make those comparisons. But I can kind of see his thing from a philosophy perspective of like the Kafka idea of metamorphosis and how does that change like who you are and what you do with your life and all this. Which is kind of what we've been hitting at the whole time, Lou, is it the outer shell or is it the William Riker or is it the inside of O'Don, who O'Don really is, the essence of O'Don, which is more important. So I can kind of see that actually from this episode. And I like the idea. I don't know that I like it. I didn't come off as potent or as powerful as he tries to make it sound in that quote.
Okay. All right. So, Doc, anything?
No, I'm good.
You're good. Okay, then, Chris, tell me a little bit about what we lost. I mean, I feel that Rejoined tends to make up for some of what they did here, but only went so far. Did you guys feel the same way, or did you guys even reference the host?
I think we probably made an offhanded joke about the host, and Matt Hansen probably made a comment about it, you know, because he's the encyclopedia of all things Trek, about how different it was than this particular episode. But I don't think they're the same. I don't think they're trying to achieve the same purpose narratively. I don't think that the only similarity that they have is that they deal with Trills, and they deal with Trills in love. And this one is trying to deal with kind of an inner singular person and how that singular person sees love. Is it the vessel that is what you love, or is it the essence that you love? Whereas that future one is more of, will you let society dictate who you can love? And so just philosophically and narratively, I feel like the two episodes are very different, and they deal with different aspects of a similar concept or a similar main idea. But the Trill allow you to do these types of stories where you can ask these types of questions. Mm-hmm. That is really cool. So I don't know that I could speak to it any more than that, you know, our episode was what it was. We talked a lot about the stigma of homosexuality in the mid-90s. We talked a lot about how culture was dictating that these people couldn't be in love or shouldn't be in love, or even if they were in love, they couldn't, you know, live it out in the world. And that this episode kind of took that to task and said, is that true? But then again, that episode is also kind of a half measure, because in the end they say, well, we're going to let this one fall to culture, and she's going to say that they can't, and she wants to follow her whatever, and they don't ever really deal with it in an appropriate way in that episode either. So both were a part of their time, and they were a half measure and a three-quarter measure, you know, so they didn't quite achieve what they could have achieved if they've just gone 100% mm-hmm. on either kind of idea.
Well, here's another thing to consider, though, too. What if the old man was put into a young male ensign? Which would have been fine for Ben, you know, he still would have been old man. But then, had we come to Rejoined, and the doctor, whatever her name was, I can't think of it.
It was Dr. Khan.
Dr. Khan! How could I not know that? So Dr. Khan was also put into a young man. And that's another thing. I don't think we would have even gotten the kiss. I don't think it ever would have happened.
It wouldn't have happened, not at the time. And I think that, sorry, Lou, when you were talking about this episode and the criticism, you know, before we had a chat about it, I think I can, like, to a certain extent, can, like, jokingly referred to it as, you know, not, quote, having enough, like, lesbian action in it. And I think it is telling that the when you're dealing with homosexuality, and certainly when you're dealing with it being Star Trek, and you are always dealing with it from a girl-on-girl aspect.
Yeah.
And that's always a lot more culturally accepted than any man-on-man action. And we have the episode
right.
next season with the Outcast, and there is a, you know, we still haven't had man-on-man kisses in Star Trek, as far as I'm aware. And we've had plenty of, you know, girls getting it on. And I do think that there is a difference in, there is an imbalance there. And I think that people generally will be much more accepting of relationships between Jadzia and another pretty-looking lady when compared to Julian and another pretty-looking man. I think there is a difference.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. Mm. I mean, I even referenced Modern Family. I've never seen the two guys kiss.
They do.
Do they?
They do on several occasions. Oh. But it is something that is clearly one step beyond. Lou, a little bit of a fact. I don't know if you are aware, but in the UK, lesbianism has never been illegal. And it is noted that it has never been illegal because it is just never noticed as something that, you know, happens. Whereas there's obviously a lot of anti-gay law in the past, and it always surrounds the man-on-man act, never the woman-on-woman act.
That's weird.
That's interesting to me. So how could this episode have been a little more potent if it was Picard who had kind of fallen in love? And I know that captains are supposed to fall in love, or even Geordi have fallen in love with this female Trill, and then she dies and it becomes a male. And I feel like, you know, you could do a really interesting kind of perspective on that. But again, they weren't going to go there at this time, and that's fine. It still gives me the interesting thought stuff that I love Star Trek for.
I mean, also in terms of the in terms of the episode, also next season with the kind of the non-gendered people, it's still William Riker and a female actress, and when it's co-genitor in Enterprise, it's still it's still Tucker and a female actress. And
now, is it true that Frakes asked for a male actor, and they were like, "No, we're going to go with this female"?
That sounds familiar. It's in the Outcast, like, I believe.
Indeed. I think it sounds like something that he has put out there. I don't know how true it is.
Right.
But I think it would have been more forward-looking.
That's the equivalent of, I'm not gay, but I've got many gay friends. I mean, that's what Riker or Jonathan's probably trying to say, but not actually say it, because that's so cliche-ish.
Well, I mean, I don't know. I think it's cliche if you're saying it and you have, like, one friend, you know? Mm-hmm. But if you hang out with gay people a lot, I think it's okay to say that. Like, I think that we shouldn't throw out that term. Like, we should just throw out the idea that you have to have one token gay friend to be able to talk about gay rights, or you have to have one token black friend, you know, to talk about black rights, you know? So, I don't know.
That's why I'm glad my daughter doesn't have any of these stigmas. To her, she doesn't.
It's really beautiful. That's good stuff. Yeah, and when I teach my kids, we have to, you know, I teach in a school where we are like probably 93% African American, and I love those kids. Grew up in the culture. Grew up in a similar school, you know, and I love those kids. I love everything they think of. But when I talk to them about Martin Luther King Jr. and the things that went on in the civil rights era, they're like, "What are you talking about? Why were people this way? I don't understand." Mm-hmm. You know, so it's so far away from them in the way that they live their life. They hang out with the white kids at school and the Mexican kids at school and the Puerto Rican kids at school, and they're just all friends. They don't think about it in that way at 11 years old. You know, it's not a us versus them mentality yet. Thankfully, there are some places where it still is that when you get a little older, but thankfully, you know, these kids, they don't see that. They see TV shows and there are white people and black people represented right beside each other. Mm-hmm. And it's almost like the dream, the MLK's dream. So I have the same sort of dream for for my uncles who got married, you know, just a few years ago, even though they were together for 20 years. And Matt Hansen, whenever he decides to get married, and my buddy who teaches with me, who you know, would love to get married someday, I'm sure. So, yeah, I think that it's neat that society can move forward in this way, that these things that were once, you know, the end of the world are actually like, oh, it's not that bad, and we're all okay. We all live next to each other, and we love each other, and that's it, mm-hmm. you know. So.
Yeah, okay. Someday the old bigotries will be gone. And
they'll have new bigotries in their place, you know.
Well, like you touched on the transgender thing. I mean, there's one thing we didn't discuss, and you know, can you imagine where's a transgender bathroom issue going to go? And to me, I don't see an issue. The only thing I do see an issue is when somebody uses that as the ability to, like, for instance, you know, the fact that a man, you know, it feels feminine and wants to use the women's restroom, I'm perfectly fine as long as it's true and it's real. But some pervert that just wants to go into my daughter's bathroom, that terrifies me. But how do you do a test to determine what's real and what isn't?
And Lou, a pervert who wants to go into your daughter's bathroom is going to go into your daughter's bathroom because he's a pervert.
Yeah.
He doesn't need any transgender, you know, politics to choose to break the law because he's a pervert and he wants mm-hmm. to do that anyway. So, you know, that's...
Yeah. That's the problem. That's something we're going to have to get through as a society. I don't know, you know, I don't know what my daughter's generation believes on that issue, but that's a very scary proposition for me. And
excuse me here. I've got a bad cough, but what's wrong with mixed bathrooms?
If they're,
is that a thing in the US?
No. Well, no. If it's just the one person at a time thing, that's perfectly fine. There are some that have, you know, the urinal over there and the potty chair over there, I call it.
You don't need a urinal person. I mean, think the idea of actually also having a urinal there is slightly inviting a certain type of behavior that you might not want to be doing in front of little girls.
Well, that's true, but
okay, leave the urinal out. How often, Lou, have you seen a penis when you go to the restroom?
I never looked, but
okay. You know, you know, you go into the stall. Who's staring in the stall? Like, I don't know. Like, if a pervert's going to do that, whether it's guys or girls,
you're right. You're absolutely right there. You're absolutely right there.
But I mean, there's a big push in the UK, at least, to have mixed toilets, certainly like at school, and certainly for primary school. You will generally have now places set up with you know, both boys and girls sharing.
Mm-hmm. Really. Mm-hmm. That hasn't happened here yet, and I don't know if it ever will. I think that's going to be a contention that I don't see a resolution to. Except for to create one person at a time restrooms.
Mm. Yeah.
That's the only way I could see that being resolved, because, again, if it was a strict matter of, you know, a man who was born a man who wants to be a female going into the female restroom. I've worked with people who identify as the other side, and even human resources had to get involved in it and determine that this person is allowed to use this restroom or this restroom, can go into both. Or, you know, a woman who was born a woman can now go into a men's restroom. It seems a little weird.
But let me just ask a question out to the other men. Do we have the men really have a problem with women using the men's toilets? Because
again, I haven't ever seen, like, when I go into the stall, I don't see the guy in the next stall. Mm. I see some shoes. If there are high heels over there, it doesn't change the idea that it's just someone pooping or peeing. Like, I don't know.
You know, even, you know, I don't want to characterize all men in this manner, but I doubt many men have a problem with women using men's bathrooms. And,
right.
You know, whenever there's like a public event and stuff like that, and there's obviously the queue for the women's that's a mile long, and the men are generally quicker at doing their business. Mm-hmm. It's very common for women to be in men's bathrooms. Now, I accept that you might have a problem, and certainly protective fathers have a problem with men going in with females and young females in particular, but that's more of a kind of like a protection issue, right?
Oh yeah,
it's not, you know, that's not because you expect to turn into a woman's bathroom and expect, you know, all of the half naked ladies to be standing there kind of checking each other out, and this guy gets turned on by it. So it's you know, I think it's very strange. I think there is a asymmetric kind of a behavior here.
Mm-hmm. So it's something that's going to have to somehow be determined, and I don't ever see in that having a resolution other than one person stalls. That's it. Okay.
Or a free flow.
A what?
One long toilet.
Well, hell, they have some of those over here. I've went into restrooms that they're not urinals. It's a trough where you stand in a circle, you know.
Oh, yeah, that's like at any football game or baseball game you go to. Like, you always see the men's bathroom is just a trough.
Hell,
and everybody
no.
just stands beside each other in peace.
I mean, no, you can have them in front of you. No, thank you. Uh-uh. No, I can't. I don't know why. Maybe it's some kind of goofy phobia in me. But I couldn't use that. So maybe in a sense, I'm Beverly Crusher, saying I'm not used to these kind of changes. I need my privacy. But in the 24th century, who the hell knows? They don't go pee anyway. It just gets beamed out.
They still have to pee. You mean like they beam it out of their bladder?
Who knows?
Lou, that's a little, I don't know. That's a change I don't know that I can accept.
Well, for lazy people, it'd be fine. You know? I mean, let's face it. How many times have you ever had to take a seat in the toilet and you felt like you were giving birth? I mean, I'd love to have that beamed out.
All right.
Oh, God. Where the hell did that come from? So, I mean, that shit's painful. Literally.
Oh, I'm a man, not a woman. God's sake.
Oh my God, so painful.
By the way, I'm pretty sure that most mothers out there will certainly claim any pain associated with a slightly mild form of constipation is not the same as giving birth.
No,
not even a little bit the same.
No, I think Bill Cosby might have had it right when he said, take your bottom lip and pull it over your head. That's what childbirth is like. Well, that's what his wife said it was like, I guess. I don't know. Okay, guys. So we're done. I guess I wasn't nearly as hateful on this episode as I thought I'd be.
Nowhere near.
Okay. Well, then I guess it's now time. Well, go on, Chris. You were going to say something.
No, I think you could probably edit out those few curse words in the early part, and you'd be able to drop this on TechCast or whatever. So.
No, because quite honestly, I'm trying to get people to, we're still getting like 60, 80 downloads on Tech Podcast. And, you know, someday that RSS may die and those people would be gone. So I'm trying to get people to convert over anyway. Okay, so now it's time for our final thoughts and ratings on this episode on a scale of 1 to 2, with 1 being the worst and 2 being what it should be. Okay, I'm sorry. I guess it's 5. 1 to 5. 1 being the worst and 5 being somewhere up there to remind you other episodes like Yesterday's Enterprise or, you know,
Inner Lights.
Cupid. Yeah, some of the good ones there. Not Melora, but some of the good ones. That's what a 5 is. Keep that in mind.
I just got Lou to admit that Cupid was one of the good ones. He'll listen back to this as he's...
Oh, no, I won't. No.
You already did. You already said it. It's too late now. You can't rescind it.
I missed that.
Don't take these backsies.
You said Cupid? Okay. Anyway, gotta go now. Chris, why don't you... You're our guest. Why don't you start? Give us your final thoughts and your rating.
This episode, like I said at the beginning, very slow. It is a bottle episode, except for one scene, which they obviously didn't spend that much money on. It's intriguing, has a lot of really cool ideas that obviously inspired some of the writers of Deep Space Nine to take this simple concept of a symbiotic relationship between two sentient beings and kind of explore it further. And they didn't even feel like changing the name. Despite the fact that they changed literally everything else about the culture and the people and even how they looked. So I think that this episode is great in its idea form. I think that it is a little less great in its execution and storytelling and ultimate point that it was trying to make. But I still think it's a pretty good episode. I think it's worth watching as a piece of thoughtful writing and concept that could get you to walk down a couple of paths that maybe you didn't think you could walk down. So I'm going to give this a solid 4 out of 5 stars.
Okay, so that's 2 for Chris. Okay, James.
Yeah. So, I mean, by the way, I'm about to lose my voice. I'm not necessarily doing very well this episode. I hear everything that Chris says, and I kind of agree with a lot of it. But I think 4 out of 5 is crazy. I think it's around a 2, personally, because I think it has something in there that it's trying to do, and it is doing its best not to touch on the interesting stuff, but instead to have relatively dodgy scenes with, you know, with Gates McFadden and the actor that was clearly only on set for half a day before he gets switched over to Will. I do find the story generally boring, but I do acknowledge what they were trying to do and what they were trying to kind of like orchestrate together. I don't look forward to this episode, really. I think there's a lot better elsewhere in season 4. And what I've said a lot about season 4 recently is that a lot of the stuff is very well written, and you have good performances, good, everyone kind of firing on all thrusters. And we don't have that this episode. I mean, you know, the big players aren't there. Like Patrick Stewart isn't really here. Data's not really here. There aren't. I think Will is, he's not Riker in this episode. He's someone else. And I don't particularly like that character. I don't have a big problem with how it ends, but it's mainly because I'm not interpreting it the way it has been interpreted elsewhere. And it's a good thing that DS9 kind of made the drill better. So with the risk of me losing my voice, I give it 2 out of 5 stars.
Okay.
Which is a mer.
Yeah, mer. And you know, you raised a good point. He wasn't even Riker. What I should have done in the guest stars, I should have put Jonathan Frakes as Riker O'Dan. He pretty much was a guest star in this. He was Riker in the beginning, but then he became a guest star. And Riker was just completely gone. But I get it. It's 1991. Homosexuals still belonged in the closet at the time. They were too scared to come out. I'm glad today is a different world. But even then, there was some acceptance. The dialogue itself, you know, shows that humans are just put off by the subject and would rather have skated around it than really dealt with it. I don't know. Maybe it was a clever dialogue to promote awareness for and predict the world of today and maybe what tomorrow will be like. Because it would be interesting to be in a society where you could be a male today and you're a female tomorrow because of that part of you that makes you who you are needs to go on and goes into a different sex. So my wife dies today and her symbiont goes into a man. You know, wow, what would I do?
You would strap in and prepare for action.
I don't think so. And like she says, maybe it's a human failing. Maybe it is. But me, I can't be into men. I can't. And so what would happen if she's to die and her soul is, as we would put it, symbiont as they would put it, is put into another man? Shit, I don't know. It just would be, it's not even a concept I can consider. So I guess, to each his own, but, you know, had she said that, look, you know, it's all around me. I'm okay with it. I'm perfectly fine. It's just not for me. I would have said, good, that's fine. Perfectly understood. But they were trying to talk out of both sides of their mouth. You know, it's a human failing. It's not something, you know, perhaps our ability to love won't be so limited. And then she says that. Perhaps in the future, our ability to love won't be so limited. No, I think there will always be divisions, and there will always be people who cannot be, who can't be what they are not. So I think in the future, I do believe it's becoming more accepted. It is accepted. It will be more accepted. It'll be a whole lot more accepted in the future. But there will still be the division of, I'm just not into men. That's the way it will always be. And she'll just not be into female. I do wonder, however, and we didn't touch on this, what if the female O'Donnell had a few more days on the ship? Could she have maybe coaxed Beverly into this relationship like Riker O'Donnell was able to do? Because had he left the ship, it would have been over. This woman leaves the ship. But because Riker O'Donnell stayed, it wore on her. And she realized right there in the other side of this room is that relationship that I once had and could have again. Well, what if this woman had stayed on a few more days? What would have happened? But we'll never know, because with the slew of string guitars playing in the background, they take off forever. So I guess in a sense, I feel a little bit better about this than when I started. I do look forward to DS9's rejoin to make up for some of it. And, what, James? Say that again, please.
Sorry, I'm just making a snarky comment over Skype as we commented, which is, we'll never know what would have happened had she stayed on. But of course, that's what fan fiction is for.
Definitely. That's what the books is for. So anybody knows...
Go write it.
Go write
it. Not the books. Fan fiction. Those are two different things.
Oh, really?
Get with it, Lou.
Oh. Maybe I ought to look into that. Oh! Didn't I see... Oh, okay. There was some kind of fan fiction one time about Picard and Riker, if I remember.
Yeah, man.
Oh, yes.
That's what fan fiction is for.
Oh, okay.
There are lots of other reasons that people...
Oh, that's right.
One big reason is that piece.
And then there was Kirk and Spock.
That was the original.
Yes, it was. Okay, I hadn't forgotten about that.
Slash fic, they call it.
Yeah, I guess. Okay, so DS9, I think... I don't know if they... Maybe they didn't even have the host in their mind at all when they... came up with rejoin, but I still think it does make up a little bit. It says, you know, everything is accepted, but they don't only go so far. We'll discuss that later. So I do like the tender moments of Beverly's heartbreaking at times. I even like the way they put Picard out of place, and he's having to deal with this man who's talking about a woman he really, really is in love with, but yet can't do anything about. But this guy expects him to discuss that woman. Totally out of place. But anyway, I'm with James. This is a very low 2. There are a few good parts in it, a few thought-provoking moments. But I couldn't give it a middle of the road. It just gets hit by a car. Every time it's in the middle of the road, a drunk driver hits it. So I'm afraid this is going to be a 2. And that is the host. Chris, I had to redo my computer. It had a virus on it. So I actually was able to do a dual boot with Vista and 7. Uh-huh. Not 7 of 9, but Windows 7.
You wish.
Why would you need that?
I would do a dual boot with 7 of 9 any day. but anyway, Vista is no longer being supported by Microsoft, so I can't get any software updates or anything on it, so I only use Vista to do the show. Because I can't...
By the way, Lou, I'm pretty sure Windows 7 is not being supported by Microsoft anymore.
It is on Service Pack 1 until 2020.
Okay.
But it won't be after, you know, that. But, I mean, yeah, so 7 is... It's okay, but I can't seem to get Call Graph Toolbar to work no matter what. And I think you have that issue with 10.
Yeah, but I was running Cool Graph on 8 for a long time.
Ah, okay. So really, so it should work. Maybe I need to try it some more.
I feel like they fixed Call Graph on 10 at this point.
Oh, I haven't tried for. I mean, Lou does all the work so well that I haven't tried for a long time.
I don't use Skype. We use we still use YouTube. But yeah, I thought that my buddy who uses Skype he's on 10, and I'm pretty sure he's able to use it now. But I don't know.
Has to be something I'm doing wrong. I don't know what. But basically, I have the guest list on the 7 version documents, and I can't access it through Vista. So I have no idea when we have you on again. Do you?
I don't know, but I know that I'm on for Fistful of Datas at some point.
Ah, okay.
2020. That's when the 7 jumps out.
Yeah. All right. You'd had no idea this would be a lifelong commitment, huh?
Hey, I'm with you, Lou.
I hope so.
And I know I'll get an email update. So
that'd be funny if we're still, you know, if we went on to DS9 as you were still doing the last part of DS9.
But yeah, I doubt it. We're gonna finish DS9 pretty quick.
Well, you guys put out an episode. Yeah, you guys are committed.
Yeah,
fanatically committed.
We did take 1 week off for Christmas, but we were right back at it.
Oh my goodness. What'd you ever do? Okay.
Well, we had, we just had fun.
All right.
We did Christmas.
Well, I really wish I could be on the show again, but yeah. Sundays are committed.
Are they? Always?
Yeah. Yeah, I'd have to take a day off. So if I find something in the future, the problem is, you never know what could happen, and you might go off a week and, my day off was last week that I took off for it, and I can't take off next week, so it's hard.
Well, if there's an episode that you have and you could be on for a Saturday recording, we could maybe work something out.
Yeah.
But it's generally weekends for us because Hanson's in school and
yep.
You know, stuff like that. So just let us know, Lou, if you're interested, and we can see if we can work something out for you.
Yeah, same difference. I work Friday, Saturday, Sunday, Monday, Tuesday.
Oh.
Yeah. Yeah. So, all right, but we'll figure something out.
Yeah, man.
All right. I don't have my list. What's next week?
Isn't it like the Mind's Eye or something like that?
Are you sure? I want to feel silly saying the wrong thing. Let me see here. Pull it up on my...
All this will be cut out.
I don't think so. I'll probably forget.
It's gonna make it in the episode.
Oh, come on. Well, so join us next week, guys, as we review another episode of Star Trek The Next Generation. Season 4.
The Mind's Eye.
It is. The Mind's Eye.
Oh, yes. Keep all of this in.
Yes.
And make sure you eat your Generation O's, the Star Trek Next Generation cereal.
That's right. Generation O's.
Romulan target, Geordi LaForge.
He has no choice but to see what I wish him to see.
They're programming him to sabotage the Federation.
Do not attempt to leave orbit.
You speak as if we are enemies and not allies.
And brainwashing him into a ruthless assassin.
Today, we have a known spy on board.
I want you to kill him.
Mind control on Star Trek The Next Generation.
So join us next week as we review episode 24 called The Mind's Eye, and we should have somebody on, but I don't know who. So take care, and good night, everyone.
Good night.
Good night.
All right.